I'd like to convene the Ways and Means Committee and just to give members and the audience a heads up. The reason we had to be very timely in convening is that we're being live streamed on the city website, and we were asked to start promptly at 9 o'clock. So that's why I convened, even though some people were still kind of standing around. As we get started, I do want to acknowledge the help in getting this all put together on the part of not only our staff, but some of the city staff that helped put this particular hearing together. And it was Lucy Martin, if you could maybe acknowledge, there we are, and Monica Hennessy. I don't see Monica Hennessy, but, and then also, oh, it's Monica Hennessy Mohan. I think that's the full name. Okay, well, at any rate, thank you to the city staff for helping put this together. I thought to get things started, before we have Mr. Marks do his presentation, I would like the Speaker of the House to comment a bit about the mini-session and maybe a little reflection of the past few days from your perspective.
Well, thank you. Good morning, everyone. I'm delighted that so many members of the legislature decided to participate, really made this a success. There were a lot of mini-sessions in the 1970s, 1980s, and 1990s, and it seemed time to give an old idea a new try. And Winona has really done an outstanding job. I think the 3 days that we've spent here bode well for the future of mini-sessions. I think most people learned a tremendous amount from the local community. And we're very grateful for all of the work that people put in. You know, we'd like to think that the capital city of St. Paul is very accessible to everybody, and we'd like to think that we're all very easy to contact. But we think it's also important to come out into greater Minnesota and show folks that we care enough to be here, and that you don't have to go to St. Paul to have an impact on what we're doing. So we wanted to come here and be present and kind of make that case ourselves in person. So thanks again to the communities of Winona and Rochester and Austin for helping us have a very successful mini session, I think. And I'm looking forward to the discussion this morning. Thank you.
And we will do committee introductions, so if you could maybe give your name and district where you're from. District numbers sometimes don't necessarily help people identify where you're from, so maybe your primary place of residence. And we can start over to my right with Representative Draskowski, and we'll just go around the table with introductions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Steve Draskowski. I grew up right across a creek here in Bluff Siding, Wisconsin, an unincorporated community, and live at Mazeppa. My district line is about, between myself and Representative Blowski, is about 3 miles north or so of here.
State Representative Joe Schumacher. I grew up on the opposite side of the state from here, just along I-90 if you keep going down into Laverne.
Representative Bob Vogel, I live in Elko Newmarket, and I represent Southern Scott and Western Lee Sorties.
Good morning, everyone. I'm State Representative Jerry Hertas. I reside in Greenfield, Minnesota, which is in Hennepin County, the very northwest part of it. I represent that area of Hennepin County, about a third of the county geographically, and there are 11 cities that I represent in western Hennepin.
I'm State Representative Peggy Scott, and I represent the cities of Andover, Northern Coon Rapids, and one precinct in the city of Ramsey.
Let me revert back to Jim Dean that just grabbed a seat.
Thank
going
you very
down
much.
The table. So.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, Representative Jim Dabney, Minneapolis.
Good morning, State Representative Paul Torkelson. I represent all of Brown County, most of Redwood, and a little bit of Renville. I live on Lake Hanska in southern Brown County, acting as lead this morning. Could I ask the mayor a question?
Well, if we could finish perhaps the introductions first, and then I'd be happy
it would,
to
it would only
that.
Take a second.
Well, all right, go ahead.
There were some fireworks last night, and we don't know where they came from. Any idea?
I have no idea. I never heard them.
Well, the Nancy Connelly, the chair, the staff person, and my wife both saw them, and I don't think they were hallucinating.
Our police chief could answer that.
You can call it a private individual's contribution. Enough said.
The community's engaged. I'm State Representative Melissa Hortman. I represent a little further up the Mississippi River, the counties of Anoka and Hennepin, and the cities of Coon Rapids and Brooklyn Park.
And as we indicated earlier, the Speaker of the House. I'm Lyndon Carlson. I chair the Ways and Means Committee. My district is in the northwest suburbs of Minneapolis. I represent parts of Crystal, New Hope, and Plymouth.
Good morning. My name is Ryan Winkler. I represent just south of Lyndon Carlson, parts of Golden Valley, St. Louis Park, Plymouth, and the community of Medicine Lake. And I also serve as the Majority Leader of the Minnesota House.
Representative Gene Pulowski. I represent Winona, Lewiston, Homer, and nine people in La Crescent. Seven of them did.
By the way, Representative Pulowski was very involved when we had our very first mini session here a number of years ago.
30, but who counts?
30 years, okay. And so we're revisiting the concept of getting the legislature out and about, as the Speaker indicated. And Representative Pulowski, your local representative, has been very involved with the planning process for this one. Alice?
I'm Alice Hausman. I represent a couple of neighborhoods in St. Paul, St. Anthony Park and Como Park, and three suburban cities, Falcon Heights, Lauderdale, and most of Roseville. If you have been to the State Fair, you have been in my district.
I'm Jean Poppe, State Representative, and I grew up in Houston, Minnesota. I now represent Austin, Minnesota, and surrounding communities.
I'm Representative Paul Marquardt. I live in Dilworth, which is right next to the city of Moorhead, and I represent all or parts of Clay, Norman, and Becker County.
Good morning. I'm Representative Leon Lilly, and I represent the cities of North St. Paul, Maplewood, and Oakdale. Thank you for having us.
Jean Lagunas, representing far south Minneapolis and the northeast section of Richfield.
Hi, good morning. State Representative Frank Hornstein. The area I represent includes parts of downtown Minneapolis and southwest Minneapolis.
Okay, so you see we have a good cross-section of the state here, and there's a very bipartisan representation here this morning with the committee.
Excuse me. I didn't realize we had people sitting behind me.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Rena Morant. I represent St. Paul, Minnesota.
Good morning. I'm Representative Peter Fisher. I represent the communities of Maplewood, White Bear Lake, Birchwood, Monomita, and Wilderney.
Good morning. My name is Nick Zerwas. I represent Sherburn and Wright counties.
John Petersburg, Owatonna, Waseca.
Did I miss anyone else? Okay. We have on the agenda the Chief Fiscal Analyst for the Minnesota House. And by way of background, the Ways and Means Committee is intimately involved with the budgetary process for the Minnesota House. One of our key responsibilities is to set what we call the targets or the budget resolution, which would determine the spending levels from the House perspective of each of the fiscal committees. And so that's a very important part of our role. And then in the end, near the end of the session, virtually all of the bills with a fiscal impact go through Ways and Means before they are reported to the House floor. So that's in a very general way the role of the Ways and Means Committee. So Mr. Marks is our Chief Fiscal Analyst, and he's going to go over a few sheets that give an explanation of the budgetary process. But I should point out, we did acknowledge, due to fireworks, the mayor earlier, but maybe if the mayor could raise his hand and indicate his presence. And Mr. Mayor, are there any other council members or elected officials present in the audience? Okay. Okay, well, thank you for being. Which one? Oh.
We got COVID. Chair of the County Board.
County Board of Commissioners.
And I also want to say I appreciate the staff that worked with the planning committee to put together the agenda. It was literally built from the ground up, so we appreciate the time and the work that went into that.
Okay, well, thank you.
My name is Chris Meyer. I'm also on the planning board.
Thank you. Is anyone else? Okay. Anyone else that we should acknowledge that's here in the audience? Well, thank you for being here. And as I mentioned, did we have a couple more arrivals?
Yes. Oh,
okay.
Dave Baker from Wilmer.
And Todd Hamilton has joined us. Okay. And Representative Hamilton, we asked people to say where they were from.
Mount Lake,
Minnesota. Okay. So you see we have a good cross-section of the state of Minnesota here today. What I'm going to ask if we may is that Mr. Marks will do his presentation. And unless you have a real pressing question, let's hold questions from committee members until he walks through his presentation. But we'll... if you have a real pressing question, let me know. Otherwise, we'll take those questions at the end. Mr. Marks?
Good morning. Thank you. Just to mention, there are copies of the handout over here on the table if people don't have them. Mr. Chair and members, my goal here is to do a very brief overview of the state budget and just to kind of set a perspective for it. So, on page 2, I'm not going to go through this other than to emphasize the middle bullet here, which is that the state budget's on a biennial basis, and so all the numbers you're going to be looking at are for a two-year period for the biennium that started July 1st of 2019 and runs till June 30th of 2021. But the important point here, if you're making comparisons to city or county or other budgets, this is the budget for a two-year basis, so the numbers include 2 years of funding here. We're going to look at the state budget in two parts here. The first several graphs are the all funds budget, as we would call it, or basically all of the state's operating funds. The fund that we spend the most time with is the general fund, and we will get to that in a couple minutes, but this is looking at all funds, so it includes federal funds, it includes dedicated funds like Trunk Highway Fund, it includes things like Game and Fish Fund, and so on. As we look at the spending sides of this, we'll see what those funds are. The all funds budget, the legislature, all of these, the collection, the spending of all this money is authorized in state law. A lot of the non-general fund areas are authorized in permanent law, or what we would call statutory appropriations. And while they can be changed, they can be reviewed every legislative session, a lot of them continue, even if they're not reviewed or looked at or even mentioned in the law of that session, they are written in permanent statute. The numbers here, total revenues in the all funds budget, $87.4 billion for the two-year period. And you can see the big categories of state revenue. Federal grants, which pass through the state treasury, actually make up the biggest chunk at 30.2%. Income tax at 29%. Sales tax at 17%. And then a variety of other categories here. And on the next page in the handout, it's not going to be in the slides, are the numbers for these categories. So if you want to look at the numbers, you can see them there. Then on page 5 in the handout, expenditures in all funds by program. If you look at the total number, $88.8 billion of spending, that's about a billion higher than the revenue. That's because of money carried forward from the previous biennium. And it's pretty safe to say that this $88.8 billion is showing up here. It's not all of it will probably get spent. Some of that will get carried forward into the next biennium as well. But at this point, it's projected to be spent. If you look at the all funds budget here, then Health and Human Services is the biggest area of spending. This is in the all funds budget. When we look at general fund, it's going to be education. The difference is largely federal money that comes into the state for lots of health and human service purposes. But health and human services, in looking at spending by program at 44%, K-12 education close to 25%, and then other categories, none of the other ones exceed 10%, transportation almost at 10% in that grouping. Then the next, the numbers, the next page in the handout shows the numbers for those particular categories. The page labeled page 7 in the handout is taking the same state spending and showing it by fund. So instead of by programs, showing it by fund, you can see that the general fund is about half, 50.2% of the total. Federal funds just under 30%. Transportation and transit about 7.6%. The debt service at 2.2 in the upper right hand side. That's the payments to pay off general obligation bonds, the long term debt that the state enters into to build buildings and repair buildings and so on. The special revenue fund, which is also in the upper right hand side at 4.4%, that is a conglomeration of lots of different items. There are over 1,000 accounts or separate spending accounts within that, and they include any number of things. They include some of the licensing fees. If you're an attorney and you get your attorney's license, you pay that to the state. That goes into the special revenue fund. If you're a state agency and you hold workshops, so like the Department of Education holding workshops for teachers and charge a fee for that, and then use that fee to pay for workshops in the future, that goes into an account in the special revenue fund. There are over 1,000 in that particular fund. So. I would call your attention to page 8 in the handout. That lists all the funds on the previous graph. A lot of them were in the other category, and a lot of them are relatively small, but you can see the whole list of, I believe it's 35 or 36 separate funds that the state has in what are considered operating funds. And as I said before, most of these funds, probably two-thirds of them are statutorily appropriated, where the money is the money comes in, the money is appropriated in statute. Okay, then getting down to the general fund, the fund where the legislature and the governor spend most of their time and where there is the most flexibility, this looks at where general fund resources come from. And the general fund resources for the fiscal 2021 biennium at $48.2 billion. And you can see the two big categories there, individual income tax at 53%, sales tax at 24.7%. The two of those are over three-quarters of the revenue in the state budget. And one thing to keep in mind when you think about revenue in the state budget, these are two areas that are affected by what's going on in the economy. People pay income taxes based on the amount of money they're making. They pay sales taxes based on what they buy and how much money they're spending. So that's how the economy plays into whether the state has more revenue or less revenue. Corporate income tax is 6.6%, and then various other categories on there. And the chart on the next page goes into more detail on what those other categories are. Then on page 11 in the handout, I show the general fund spending for the 2021 biennium. General fund spending at $48.5 billion, slightly more than the general fund revenue number. And again, that's because of money carried forward from the previous biennium and balance forward, as it's called. When we look at general fund spending, elementary, secondary education is the largest category at 41.5%. Health and Human Services then at 30.5%. And then on the right side of the chart, higher education at 7%, property tax aids and credits, which include aids to local governments, aids to cities and counties, as well as various programs for property tax relief at 7.8%. An example of, Where it makes a big difference here as far as general fund and other funds, if you look at transportation, the fourth one up on the left side, transportation out of the general fund budget is at 0.7%. Transportation in the all funds budget was 9.8%. That's because transportation, most transportation spending is in things like the Trunk Highway Fund or various transit funds. It's not in the general fund. So that's a quick run through of these, the funding, the all funds budget, the general fund budget. Couple other pages here. The current general fund budget situation, some points here. At the end of the 2019 legislative session, the fiscal 18-19 biennium, now the previous biennium, was projected to end with a $606 million balance. I talked about that balance that carries forward into the current biennium. As of July, we knew that fiscal 19 revenue was $636 million more than was forecasted. And within that $636, $450 million of it was income taxes. The income taxes were that much higher than forecasted. We don't have the detailed information yet, but spending is almost always, or is always less than was forecasted, and so the fiscal at 19 ending balance will also be bigger because of that. And those final numbers will be released when Minnesota Management and Budget releases the November forecast, probably in the first week of December. Also mentioned here, and it's not written on the page, the 2019 legislature authorized three contingent appropriations based on the fiscal 19 ending balance, or based on whether or not the fiscal 19 balance was going to be greater than was projected at the end of the session. The Commissioner of Management and Budget announced yesterday that they knew it was going to be, and they were authorizing that spending. That those amounts, it's $20 million that will be transferred to the disaster contingency account, $13 million that will be appropriated for Metro Mobility in fiscal 21, and then $30 million that's appropriated for school safety grants. So those are now authorized, that money is now authorized to be spent. Then following up here, in the first two months of fiscal year 2020, revenue has been $83 million higher than forecasted. At the end of the 2019 looking into 2021, then at the end of the 2019 legislative session, the fiscal 2021 balance was projected to be $242 million, and that included the $606 million carried forward from fiscal 19. I already mentioned a large share of Minnesota tax revenues dependent on economic changes. And then a few statistics in the last bullet. The state's budget reserve is at $2.075 billion. In addition, the cash flow account has $350 million in it. An MNB issues a report every September 30th that recommends a budget reserve amount. The numbers in here are no longer correct because that new report also came out this week. MNB now recommends the budget reserve be at 4.9% of revenue instead of 5%. And 4.9% would be $2.334 billion based on the current revenue projection. That's a dynamic number. It changes every time the revenue forecast is issued. And then one other note, at the time of the November forecast, 33% of the fiscal 2021 balance, if there is one, will be transferred to the budget reserve. The last page, just some notes. The next key point in state budgeting will be a November forecast. And that forecast will be issued in late November or early December. The law allows it to be as late as the first week in December. And that forecast will provide final revenue and spending numbers for fiscal 18 and 19, the biennium that ended June 30th. It will update revenue and spending for the current biennium, fiscal 2021, and it will also update the planning estimates for the next biennium. Mr. Chair, that's my presentation.
I'm happy to take questions. Okay, and before we go to questions, I should acknowledge we've had some additional members that have joined us. The vice chair of the committee, Liz Olson. I'm not sure where she's. Oh, there at the end. Okay. And from Duluth. And then Diane Loeffler is over here and represents Northeast Minneapolis. And then we have Sandy Mason, who's joined us, and Is it Egan, if I recall?
Egan.
Yeah, represents the suburb of Egan. So we've had more members that have joined us, and thank you for being here. Mr. Marks, as we go to questions, you mentioned the forecast and that it'll be out in December, and that usually generates a fair amount of discussion and headlines. Maybe you could share with the committee and the members of the audience just what that process is. You and I and some others meet prior to the forecast, but if you could maybe just tell members what that process is.
Mr. Chair, members, there are really two parts to the forecast. The forecast projects revenue, and it also projects spending. And so the spending part of the forecast is work that's largely done in various agencies, the Department of Human Services, the Department of Education, as far as projecting enrollments, and Department of Human Services projecting needs in medical assistance, which would be the largest forecasting program there. It's those programs that have forecasted expenditures, or where the law is written, like in the general education aid formula, a certain number of dollars times the number of pupil units. And so that's subject to change whenever pupil units are forecasted. The same sort of thing in medical assistance, the number of people who are eligible for medical assistance. So that's one part of the forecast. Those appropriations that are forecasted or not set, an appropriation where $10 million is appropriated for something, that's not going to change, but those that where they have formulas written in statute could change depending on the need there on the spending side. And then on the revenue side, it's probably a more complicated process in that the Minnesota Management and Budget economists look at what are the national trends, what's going on in the economy. The Minnesota forecast is based on a forecast done by a company called IHS Market, which does a monthly economic forecast. And then the economists at Minnesota Management and Budget take that information, as well as what the current revenue trends are in Minnesota, and build a revenue forecast for income taxes, for sales taxes, and for other revenue sources based on those forecasts and what the most recent information is from Minnesota. The revenue part, the spending part come together, and then there's a projected budget balance that comes out of that. And as I had mentioned here, this forecast will complete the process for fiscal years 2018 and 19 for the last biennium. This is the last forecast that will deal with that biennium. And then it will update the projections for 2021 and 2022-23.
And the Council of Economic Advisors will meet prior to the November forecast, which will come out, as was pointed out, in early December. And that's a number of leading economists, including representatives of the Federal Reserve and so on. And they have a pretty thorough discussion of the state economy and how we fit into the national outlook, as well as our own state economy. And then we have the state economist who massages all of that and works through MMB and comes out with the projections that will be released in December. Oh, Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I have just a couple of questions for Mr. Marks. Mr. Marks, thank you for that overview. You said that the budget reserve target has been decreased to 4.9 or less than the 5%, and you gave that number, and I didn't catch that to write it down. Could you give me that number again?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hertaus, the number is $2.33 billion. As an aside, I'd also mention that in the letter from MMB, when they decreased the percentage, they say as they examine the state's revenue sources, they appear to be slightly less volatile than they did a year ago. And that was the reason for decreasing the percent from 5.0 to 4.9.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hertaus.
Thank you. So, Mr. Marks, then we're about $250 million away from being fully funded for the next estimated budget reserve requirement. Is that correct?
Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hertaus, yes, that's correct.
Okay. And if we are fully funded with our budget reserve, then does our previous requirement of transferring a third of our surplus revenues still have to be met, or are we free to use that money as most people in the audience might be looking for help?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bertos, the requirement is 33% up to the recommended cap. So it would be the $250 million. If the 33% was greater than that, no, it wouldn't be 33%. It would be whatever that amount was that would get us there. Keeping in mind that amount is going to change in November, too, because revenue will be reforecasted. And so 4.9% of revenue, if it's a higher number, could be higher than the $2.334 billion.
Representative Hertaus.
Thank you. So, Mr. Marks, if for example, there's a $900 million budget surplus estimate in the forecast, and that a third of that would be $300 million, $250 million being required to be fully funded for the budget reserve, that would leave an additional $50 million available for the legislature to choose to do what it wants?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bertos, yes, that's correct.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, we got one other question. We wanted to go fairly quickly to hear from the people, but if go right ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Marks, how long have you been with in the House doing this job?
Mr. Chair and Representative Scott, this particular job since 1997. I interned in House Research in 1976.
Thus the gray hair. Mr.
He's,
Chair,
he's been there almost as long as one of the members of this committee.
I have a question about the contingency spending, because I've been in the legislature going on 12 years, and I had not seen, you know, an item like that in our final budget where, you know, something is contingent on a final balance of our state coffers, from our state coffers. And I'm just wondering, in your time, have you seen that before, like a contingency type line item?
Mr. Chair and Representative Scott, yes, it's happened several times. And one of them that I can recall, which Representative Torkelson would remember, is $22 million several years ago transferred to the Clean Water Fund to replace the Clean Water Fund spending that some people argue against. And I also recall in 1995, there was a $50 added to the general education formula, depending on the amount of money that showed up in a forecast. I don't remember the specific details if that was an end of the previous biennium balance or if that was additional money in the November forecast for that year, but it has happened, and it has, I believe it's happened some additional times, but I can't recall details right now.
Thank you.
Okay, what I'd like to do, I remember we're live, and one of the purposes of being here in Winona is to hear from the community. So I do want to open it up for testimony. And as the speaker has pointed out at other meetings and this morning, we do want to hear from the public. And, you know, we are outside of St. Paul for that very purpose, to hear from the people in southeastern Minnesota, and today in particular Winona. So thank you, Mr. Marks. And I understand that there are some in the audience that perhaps would like to testify, so if you'd feel free to come forward. Oh, here we go with the list. I didn't see that. Yeah. I guess the mayor was first. Mark Peterson.
Good morning, Chairman, Madam Speaker, and committee members. My name is Mark Peterson. I'm the mayor of the city of Winona. I've been the mayor for the past almost 7 years. And this is probably my final chance to say thank you for choosing Winona to come here and to hold your mini session. It's been a real privilege to be a part of this, and it's been enlightening in many ways. And I want to recognize our representative, Gene Pawlowski, and his efforts to have you come here and do this. Thank you again. It's been wonderful. I have some brief comments, and with me is, I'll let you introduce yourself.
I'm Lucy McMartin. I'm the Director of Community Development for the City of Winona.
and thank you again for allowing us to testify this morning. Winona is an old city, and so is our infrastructure. This means our city must make long-needed improvements to streets, infrastructure, including our downtown. Winona has brought our own public and private resources together to fund key projects that are bringing jobs to our downtown, creating new housing and public spaces, and connections to the Mississippi River. To build on the success of Opportunity Winona, we have developed the next phase of our plan and identified some legislative priorities that will help us do even more for our community to continue to be able to retain and attract businesses, residents, and visitors. In the months to come, we will be asking for a partnership to continue efforts for our regional center we call Winona. We believe we are a part of the economic engine of southeastern Minnesota and the state of Minnesota. Over $300 million in taxable sales occur in the city of Winona, sending $22 million in sales tax to the state in 2017. Through Opportunity Winona, we have invested over $6 million in public funds, and there have been $40 million in private investment to date. We plan to build on the success and plan to invest further in our community. We're grateful for the opportunity to talk to you through this session, and thank you for reaching out to Greater Minnesota and holding events in our city. Yesterday, I testified before the Tax Committee, and I failed to mention something that I want to just throw out this morning. I think it's very important, and those are the historic tax credits. These historic tax credits are making a big difference in our city. A number of projects, including 102 Walnut, the Latch Building, Mason Jar, which was a burned-out shell of a building 3.5 years ago, have all been brought back, and people have invested in these, and it's really been largely because of these historic tax credits. I would very much hope that those continue. So with that,
and I would point out the chair of the Tax Committee is here at this meeting as well, and a couple of others on the committee are on taxes, so you got the word in. Okay. Ms. McMartin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'd like to start by sharing a little bit of information about how valuable the tools are that are provided by the state of Minnesota for economic development and for housing. In Winona, as you've seen on your visit here, that we're blessed with a beautiful setting, including the Bluffs and Mississippi River. And while that's great for arts, tourism, and outdoor recreation, it can be a challenge for development and redevelopment that's so important to our city. We rely on the tools through the Department of Employment and Economic Development, such as the Minnesota Investment Fund, infrastructure grants, cleanup funds because we're an old industrial riverfront, and local tools such as tax increment financing and tax abatement. Also, the mayor mentioned historic tax credits, which have been used extensively since the state of Minnesota allocated 20% to match the federal credit. We use these tools on behalf of businesses and developers when they're needed. We have used them judiciously and appreciate that they remain flexible and can change with our growing needs. An example of considering flexibility could be the Minnesota Investment Fund. Loan amounts are based solely on the number of jobs created, and with the unemployment rate hovering around 3%, perhaps total payroll for better paying jobs or increased productivity could be considered a measure for the loans. I also wanted to thank you for the transportation funds through the Port Development Assistance Fund. Transportation is a key to economic development, and many of you saw our port and how active it is. We also, as part of economic development, hear about our needs for housing. And continuing programs such as the low-income housing tax credit are extremely important for our city. Over 60% of the people who work in Winona drive here and do not live here. In closing, I just wanted to thank you for your support and for continuing to make these tools available to us. I believe that helps us have a positive economic impact on Winona and the state of Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, thank you both. And I want to thank Ms. McMartin. Yesterday we had a conversation. My very first teaching position was in this region, St. Charles, Minnesota, and she was very familiar with the community. So we had a nice conversation when we were doing some of the tours yesterday. So thank you for that conversation as well.
How long did you teach in St. Charles?
I was just down there a year, 64, 65, and I was from the city, so I went back up to the cities to teach. But, you know, I learned an awful lot when I was down here that 1 year, because I grew up in Minneapolis, and that was a farming community. And some of what I learned there really helped me in the legislature, you know, because you have an understanding of the rural areas, even though it was just a little over a year that I was there. But thank you.
Thank you.
We have Dr. Ruth Charles with Child Welfare Social Service Department.
Good morning. Okay, like, I'm super excited because this is what I teach, democracy in action. Okay, I'm Dr. Ruth Charles. I'm a professor at the Social Work Department at Winona State. I am an IFO member. I'm also the BSW 4E coordinator for child welfare, so I train bachelor-level social workers to work in the Minnesota counties in foster care and in child welfare. I'm also part of the Winona County Human Service Advisory Board and the chair of that. And for fun, and what I love, I'm also part of the coordinator of the Winona ACEs, which is the Adverse Childhood Experiences initiative that we have here in this community. And Brian Vordick has also been working with me on this. I don't have to tell you that human services takes up a large part of the Minnesota budget. And I don't have to tell you that I know you guys get a lot of requests. What I do have is a request that when you get these requests or these proposals, that you please make them be evidence-based on research, on brain science, and that you use the most recent information that we have on brain science, because this is where we are moving. When was the last time you took a human bio class or intro to psychology? It's been a while, huh? We are learning so much every day about how this body works, how our brains work, and especially we're also learning about the impact of trauma and how trauma really impacts how we interact with the world around us. When you're looking at early childhood, a child's brain, 90% of your brain developed between the ages of 0 and 3. But you don't have the conscious memory of that, because typically, your conscious memory isn't until about age 4. But one of the things is that your body does remember. Your body does remember those experiences and those traumas that happened to you. And what's so important is that when you're talking about it, and when you're, a lot of times you will respond to something without knowing why. And that is critical. So when you're looking at programs and when you're looking at different pieces and things that are going on, to be aware of trauma and to make sure that this is built into what's going on. And one of the reasons why this committee would be really, really want to know about this is that there is data, I didn't bring it with me today, but there is data that shows that it is cost effective. And that when, and this has been done in numerous states, from Washington to locally here, Iowa and Wisconsin are doing a lot of these programs. So when you're looking at creating like a housing program, a lot of times they don't work. But sometimes it's because we haven't addressed the trauma, why some people can't maintain their housing. So we need to be thinking about that. Another piece is to realize that historical trauma is real. Historical trauma, and this goes into how your genes were developed in your body and passed down. And what historical trauma is where you're, you know, it's been passed down through the generations before. And in particular, and especially in our state of Minnesota, what has happened to the Native Americans, our First Nation populations, as well as African Americans, what's happened to them, that this really does make a difference in their ability to know what's going on, why they respond, and not knowing how and why and what's going on. Part of what we're doing here in Winona is we've developed the Winona ACEs initiative, and ACEs stands for Adverse Childhood Experiences. It's based on brain science, and it's based using the issue of trauma. And just so you know, when the initial ACEs research was done, and some of you are at the committee I talked to yesterday, they did a research project on this. It was with the Center for Disease Control and Kaiser Permanente. And with their sample of 17,000 individuals, over 63% in this initial sample showed that they had experienced trauma. And this is also with a very finite idea of how they were defining trauma. And now we know it's much more. But here in Winona, we've already talked to over 200 individuals, done presentations. We have people on our list that are already, understand this and are looking at how to use this. And we've already had over 2,000 people that we've already talked to or presented to, from everything from PowerPoints to some of you have played with my glitter balls and how we're learning to teach people how to breathe. And so this is part of what we're at. And I'm going to let Brian talk about what we're doing now.
Okay, and if you could identify yourself for the record as well.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, good morning. My name is Brian Verdi. I'm the Executive Director of Engage Winona. So good morning, Mr. Chair, Madam Speaker, representatives. So I do civic engagement for a living, and I just wanted to express a moment of appreciation for not just the fact that you're here, but how you showed up in our community. We really appreciate that you're here to listen and to engage and to just be out and about in all these places doing really great work. That folks like Gene have known really well for a long time, and it's been really exciting to share all that with you. Just briefly, so my role is as the coordinator of the Winona ACEs initiative, and so we have sort of bootstrapped this work for 2 years with a few minor grants of about $10,000 total. Ruth has mentioned there's been hundreds of presentations, there's been major structural changes at organizations across the community, there's been events, there's been awareness and education. And we've done really amazing work with very limited resources and are just looking for the opportunity to do even more work with more capacity, financial capacity. I think the beautiful thing about ACEs and trauma-informed work from my perspective, I work in all kinds of areas, entrepreneurship and economic development and youth mental health and all kinds of civic issues. And there's nothing maybe closer to the core of what prevents real transformative action in terms of civic participation and community change than dealing with trauma. And so we see that present when we're doing work around housing. We see it present when we're doing work around healthcare. We see it present when we're doing work around law enforcement and drug addiction and all kinds of issues. The idea of building a trauma-informed, resilient community is really critical, I think, to the success, not just of Winona, but to communities across the state. And to do that work means to create an impact across all of these issues. So we're continuing to do really incredible work from all kinds of sort of volunteer and cobbled together efforts, and we also know that there have been some opportunities at the state level to fund this work, both in Winona and across the state, and really see that the potential to have transformative effects, not just specifically around this idea of trauma, but in all of the issues that we struggle to address in really transformative ways.
Okay, thank you. Did you have additional comments? Oh, it looked like you were going to grab the mic again. So,
hey, I'm a professor. I can talk for 2 hours, no problem.
Okay. I didn't want to dismiss you earlier than you wanted to leave the table, but thank you for testifying. And we'll now hear from Jennifer Chirenga. Chirenga with Winona State University. Welcome.
Good morning, Chair Carlson, Madam Speaker, members of the committee. My name is Jennifer Chirenga, and I'm here today representing the faculty of Winona State University and the Interfaculty Organization. I'm the Faculty Association President here at WSU, and I often say that what an incredible honor it is to have been elected to represent this faculty at this particular university. I hope after having spent a few days here in Winona and on our campus, you understand exactly why. That's such a great honor. Throughout this mini-session, various committees have heard from WSU faculty, staff, and students about the work being done in our community. You've also seen the challenges we face. Investments in public higher education have ripple effects through communities like Winona.
Every business, every organization represented over the last few days likely has a connection to Winona State University. Whether it's from hiring our WSU graduates, to providing internship opportunities for our students, to collaborating with faculty and staff on programs like the one that Dr. Charles described, that benefit all of our neighbors. These investments help Winona State University, help our region, and the state of Minnesota. As our Chancellor, Devinder Malhotra, has asserted, the most important work for us moving forward is eliminating the post-secondary racial achievement gaps. The faculty of Minn State are dedicated to meeting the goal set out by the Minnesota legislature of 70% of Minnesotans earning a post-secondary degree by 2025. But the only way to accomplish that goal is by eliminating the opportunity gaps in higher education. And the only way to eliminate those gaps is through Minn State. We are already the system of choice for students of color. Currently, Minn State campuses serve more students of color, over 64,000 students across the state of Minnesota, than the total number of students who attend the U of M Twin Cities in its entirety. But we still have gaps in terms of success. Unless we have a partner in our state government and a focused and deliberate plan to serve our marginalized communities, we will not meet the 70% goal set by the legislature or our goal to close the achievement gap. We need to protect programs that enhance the experience of marginalized students while also investing in innovative opportunities to ensure that even more students have success in our classrooms, in our communities, and ultimately earn their degrees. This is going to mean having uncomfortable conversations on our campuses, amongst our faculty, and rethinking the way we serve our students. Our faculty are committed to that work, but we need your help. We have appreciated bipartisan leadership and support on higher education issues from former higher ed chairs Nornes and our very own Representative Pawlowski. Many may remember that Representative Pawlowski led the charge for historic investments in higher education starting in 2013. However, there is still a long way to go to return us to the historic and statutory level of state funding, two-thirds of the cost of an education or attendance at a state college or university. We're still below 50% of that state funding, which means the state has shifted the burden of the cost of higher education to students and families, leading to an unsustainable level of student debt. We have seen increases in state funding, but those increases have not kept up with inflation and have included unfunded tuition restrictions. This meant continued cuts to campuses, cuts that have begun to compound and have dramatic effects on the educational opportunities we can offer Minnesotans. Most importantly, these budget reductions have had a huge impact on students. In 2018, as part of a $5.8 million budget cut, Winona State lost 33 full-time faculty lines through attrition. 33 full-time faculty lines. Those lost positions mean fewer courses for students, longer wait times to get into classes, fewer opportunities of when and how students can take courses, and longer times to graduation. This hurts our students, and it drives up student debt. Next year, we face another $3 to $5 million in cuts on this campus alone. Programs across our university are in danger. Students and my colleagues from our six other state universities have dealt with even more dramatic impacts. Currently, each of the state universities and Minn State colleges are facing extraordinary challenges. Just last month, eight tenured faculty members at St. Cloud State University were notified that they will be laid off in May. Laying off tenured faculty should be the absolute last resort when managing budgets. We have set lofty and laudable goals for us, and we have responded with our own set of critical goals for educating the people of the state of Minnesota. We cannot accomplish these goals without your support. We urge you to continue working to increase investments to all of our campuses, protect quality and affordability, and to help us create great educations for all Minnesotans. I'd be happy to answer any questions if you have any.
Okay, I think what we'll do is try to get through the testimony first. For the members of the committee and the audience, they've given me a relatively tight timeline because of this being Skyped. So we'll take questions depending on time near the end, if that's all right, if you're going to be available. Thank you. The next person is Annette, is it Freehart?
Farhart.
Okay, and that's the superintendent of the Winona Area Public Schools. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair, Speaker of the House, representatives, and committee members. First of all, I want to thank you for coming down to Winona, and actually, I don't know if any of you spent some time yesterday at our Winona Area Public Schools High School. I want to thank our WBA, our Winona Education Association, very active in organizing that. And that's just an example of what we have here in Winona. I became the superintendent of Winona Area Public Schools on July 1st, so I've been here about 2.5 months, 3 months. It has been an extremely rewarding change for me. I have been in education since 1988, and I can tell you in that time I've seen many, many changes in the educational landscape. I'm going to address you today into speaking about just funding for education in general, because since 1988 we have seen many, many changes. One of the things that I would like to address is early childhood education. As you heard from Dr. Charles, those ACEs and trauma-informed practices are extremely important as we look at our early childhood. And ensuring that schools can help support and work with those partners that we have in our communities to address these with our children will be essential to closing our achievement gap within our society. You've also heard about the need for special education cross-subsidy addressing that funding. You've heard about the mental health issues of our students and our staff and the importance of really providing funding to help support that. We thank you for the schooling mental health services that have been put into schools. They continue to have impact for our families and our students, so I encourage you to always consider that as we look at it. Our society has changed in landscape. The poverty, mass shootings since 9/11 attacks, the drug and rural impact, and then also as we look at our rural, the suicide rate among our farmers. We in this area have been impacted by that. And so that mental health work that we do within our schools for our students and our staff and working with our county services are extremely important. One of the things I have noted when I have come to Winona is the collaboration among our community organizations and higher education. This community is in a unique position where we have those. So working with Engage Winona to address the achievement gap through our racial and addressing those kinds of things is extremely important as we look at the success of our students. The collaboration we have with our Winona State University, St. Mary's University, Southeast Technical, provide our students opportunities that they may not have in other areas through our career and technical education programs and our REACH program that you may have heard about. I would urge you to really start looking at providing another Minnesota miracle. I had one board member last night refer to this. In 1971, Governor Anderson signed into law the change in funding for education. And I would urge you to look at one again, because as we look at all the changes within education in the last many years, since 1971, there is time for another one, because we need to look at how our students are different and the needs that they have in their classrooms. And being college, career, life ready means differently now than it did back in 1971. I'm now going to offer my board chair, Nancy Denzer, the microphone.
And welcome.
Good morning, Chair, Madam Speaker, and members of Ways and Means Committee. I thank you for coming to Winona. It's been an honor to see all of you and to participate. I was at the high school yesterday, and just to see our students and actually members of the House that are working or have come from Winona. My name is Nancy Denzer. I'm the school board chair for Winona Area Public Schools. I retired in 2018 after 34 years in public education. The first 15 years as a school counselor between St. Charles and Lewiston, and the last 19 as a high school and middle school principal with Rochester Public Schools. It should come as no surprise to any of you that 34 years has changed the landscape of our students and the lives of our families. educational changes and in our continued quest to provide high-quality education opportunities for all of our students. 34 years ago, the role of a school counselor was considerably different. The ratio of students to counselors was high, and the needs were more about helping find post-secondary opportunities, conflict resolution, scheduling classes, and preparing for PSAT and ACT testing. We didn't have mental health workers and limited numbers of social workers 34 years ago. Fast forward to today, the ratio of students to counselors is still high, and the needs are anything but those previously mentioned. Districts have added mental health and social workers as well as more counselors. The needs now are about safety, trauma, homelessness, mental health, suicide prevention, and on, beginning as our students walk through the doors in preschool. Our work in education has shifted to interventions, providing resources, and making sure that our children are assured that they are in a safe place to learn. WAPS has had declining enrollment for several years, which has resulted in some significant and painful budget reductions, as recently as $2.2 million this spring. While we have a tremendously talented staff of teachers and administration, the results of declining enrollment and budget reductions has taken a toll on them and the system as a whole. We are doing more with less, and needs of our students require additional skill sets that were not a part of teacher preparation programs. I continually worry about keeping our teachers healthy, yet I fear we ask more of them without giving them time, adequate compensation, and staff development to do both curriculum work and meet the increasing needs of social and emotional needs of our students. In my years of educational experience, keeping talented, healthy staff is essential because they are our hope for creating strong, capable students. I have great faith in the work that Winona Area Public Schools is doing in providing opportunities for students, partnering with businesses, and our three post-secondary institutions. It is my hope that you will fully fund public education. I'm sure you've heard that many times before. And I'm completely convinced that fully funding our public education is the most important thing we can do for our children's future, but for our future as well, because they are our future. I thank you very much for coming. I'm hoping that you can continue to work towards fully funding education, and I really thank you for coming to Winona. It's been an honor to have you here.
Okay, thank you very much. The next testifier is Linda.
All right.
I was just about to.
Were you going to guess?
I had been prompted, but at any rate, if you could identify yourself for the record and.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
And a faculty member, I was going to point out as well.
Thank you. I am Linda Feilstiger. I teach social studies at Winona Senior High School for about the last 20 plus years. So for those of you that want to do the math or are thinking about this just a little bit, yes, that means for the bulk of my career, I was a department member with your esteemed colleague, Representative Pawlowski. We shared a wall for all of that time. Some of you got to see that wall yesterday, right? For those of you that stick around for the rest of the day, which we'd love to see you stay here in Winona, at halftime of tonight's football game, we are honoring Representative Pawlowski for all the work that he's done. So you are welcome to join us. We would love to have you there. It is an honor that's long overdue. So with that, good morning, Mr. Chairman, and members of the Ways and Means Committee, Speaker Hortman. Thank you again for this opportunity to speak before you. I'm going to reiterate many of the things that you've already heard, but I think maybe I can bring a little more of a personal perspective as someone that sits in the classroom with our kids. What does education look like today, and what impact and role do you play in funding and supporting the lives of our students in Minnesota? You're going to see that there's no surprise that mental health concerns do come to the top of our list. The demand for mental health support outweighs our supply. At Winona Senior High School, we have one full-time psychologist, one part-time social worker, and three counselors. That puts our counselors at an average of about 300 students per caseload. That's better than the national average, but it is still very, very much too low for the students that we have. With that said, I'm going to tell you our school is incredibly good at handling grief. We lose at least one student a year to death. That could be suicide. About half are suicides. It's a fairly regular basis. And actually, our students have gotten used to this. There will be a, over the intercom, it'll come, staff, would you please come to the multi-purpose room right after school? And you know what our students now say? Who died now? That's our reality at this point. But again, we were assured last spring after our most recent suicide that what we're experiencing is perfectly normal. Our students and staff are exhausted by normal. And while we know that important work in people's minds race to prevention of suicide, that's really just part of the issue here. The reality is in our hallways, in our classrooms, sit the students that are the survivors. They're the family members and friends of the people we've lost, and they are struggling in ways that they've never struggled before, and they need our support in ways that they've never needed before. And as far as things like Chairman Denzer talked about, we need some more PD for our classroom teachers, but we also need more staff. And I know you've worked very, very hard to increase the counselors and mental health professionals that are in our schools, and I urge you to continue to do that. If we want our students to be successful emotionally and academically, we know that positive student-teacher relationships are critical. In order to have those strong relationships, you need to have a consistent teaching staff. We are in a district that is in consistent declining enrollment. When I began with Representative Pawlowski, you probably remember, so we had 1,500 students and more in our school, in just our high school. We are now under 1,000. This hasn't been overnight. It has been a slow and continual decline. Last spring, we cut over 20%, or about 20% of our teaching staff throughout the district. Layoffs are not always that severe, but they are a common occurrence here in Winona in the springtime. When we get our extra enrollment numbers become available and we identify the amount of funding we get from the state, there's an attempt to at least hire back some of those teachers. But here's the reality of what we're experiencing. Our best and brightest teachers have moved on to our neighboring districts that are more financially stable. And when they move, they take their time, their talents, but guess what? They also take their families. And so that's costing our community as well. So when you talk about stability of student connections, community connections, all of that is in decline when our teaching staff is inconsistent and lacks that stability. The reality is Representative Pawlowski and myself are kind of the endangered species, the teacher that committed to a 20-year-plus career in one community. And there's going to be some repercussions for that. We are so lucky in WAPS, though, to have the WAPS Foundation. It's a nonprofit organization that you find in many, many school districts. They provide thousands of dollars every year to support student learning. They support field trips, smart boards, wall maps, books, and a variety of other resources every year for our students. I am eternally grateful to the foundation, and I appreciate them being here, but I'm also sad by the fact that we rely on them so much. Field trips don't need to be a luxury. Smart boards and wall maps aren't, but they're being funded as such in our district. Yet, I have a lot of hope, okay? I have the sincere hope that you will fully fund public education. Funding our public schools with increases that almost keep up with inflation some years isn't doing it right now. Our students deserve the best education possible. We as teachers, staff members, and administrators can give that to them, but we need your help. We can't do this alone. So the state of Minnesota must treat our students like the priority that you say they are and not just talk about them as being that priority. So I urge you to commit to fully funding public education in our state. I thank you for your time. I thank you for coming to Winona. Those of you that came to Winona Senior High School, you're welcome anytime. You can come sit in my classroom whenever you wish. There's an open door. And maybe I'll even show you where Representative Pawlowski began, which actually was where my career began as well, as his substitute when he went into the legislature. So thank you.
Well, thank you. The next person is from Winona County, Marcy Kovesky.
Yes.
Was that close?
Very close.
Okay.
I don't know if I'm allowed to do this, but I'm going to say, let's stand up for just like 20 seconds, and I'm not going to need you any exercises. I do represent public health, and sitting is the new smoking.
There you go.
Okay, we'll stand. We'll take your advice. Very good.
Yeah.
It does seem like you're in the funny name section of the
presentation. I'll just interject on what you just did. I had some back problems a number of years ago, and I went to the doctor, and he said, are you still in the legislature? And I said, yes. And he said, are those chairs as comfortable as they appear on TV? And I said, oh, yes, they're very comfortable. And he said, that's your problem. And his advice to me was to get up periodically and move around. He said, go back and stand in the back of the House chambers or just move around. And I've done that consistently, and I haven't had back problems as a result of that. So
I appreciate that.
Thank you for your advice here this morning.
That does fall right in line with public health needs in our community and in our state. And if anybody would feel more comfortable standing while I'm talking, that's fine too. And I have gone by many names. I've never been called Marcy. My name is Marie Cavesi. I appreciate the lineup of speakers because, to me, it points out how much the work of Winona County and our resources relies on some of the groups you've already heard from. We have working relationships with all of the groups that have just presented with you, and we rely on their resources, and there's even more groups than just this morning. So, good morning, and on behalf of Winona County, we hope you have enjoyed your time here. We also hope you will not wait another 30 years to come back. It has been good to see the interaction with our citizens and our staff throughout this week. And if you could believe it, it was actually in the 80s here on Monday, so sorry about the rest of the week, but that is true. So today I'm prepared with some comments on the Health and Human Services Department and some statements about our housing gaps. First, the Health and Human Services Department. If there are any discussion or plans regarding reorganization, counties need to be represented at the table. As you know, counties are responsible for all the health and human services programs, and this is the largest part of our budget. Also, since it's the largest part of the state budget, it's the largest part of our $54 million budget and the most unpredictable, with reimbursement levels not keeping pace with the needs and services. This area covers about a third of our $54 million budget. In 2017, we added $4.7 million, which is about a quarter of our levy points from that year, just to balance the budget in human services. And this also included about $2.2 million in out-of-home placement programs. We provide 98 social services programs and over 30 income maintenance programs. So you can see why we rely and work together with so many community groups in the county. So today I want to talk about our needs in housing and how we got here. I'm currently chair of the Winona County Board as well as a commissioner from District 2. And I've served on our Criminal Justice Coordinating Council and also our Community Services Advisory Committee. And others, but these are the ones that are significant with us. We're in the midst of planning for a new jail, and we're addressing housing gaps to include resources for all of our citizens. So I'm here today to talk about the gaps in housing, and a little different than the testimony yesterday at the Housing Committee. I want to stress how important it is to fill these gaps and to develop a system of treatment and transition for many citizens. Housing is one of the main social determinants of health. All of our community programs include treatment, therapy, jobs, reuniting and stabilizing families, and these certainly belong as goals for individual programs, but without stable housing, they can be very ineffective. Yesterday you heard efforts in the city of Winona and Goodview to provide available worker-level housing so critical for our economic growth. So I have some data, and you should have a handout showing Winona County data from the Minnesota Housing Partnership. They have county-by-county data. Should have the top that looks like this. This shows our median rent increased by 7% from 2000 to 2017, and our median income fell by 11%. So already there's a gap, you can see. And renters make up 30% of our 20,000 households. And if you look at the bottom part of that page, it's showing something about the cost burden, and I'm going to talk a little bit more directly about the cost burden when I present data from our Winona County Health Needs Assessment. And this cost burden information focuses on seniors. If you look on the second page, there's also a chart showing wages and housing affordability in Winona County, which gives you some ideas of the amount of wage that's needed to be earned, the amount of program growth that's expected in these wage areas, and the gaps between affording a one-bedroom or median value home. Excuse me, a two-bedroom apartment on this page. So I'm not going to speak any further on that. You can just kind of go through it later. But at a minimum wage, it takes 43 hours a week to afford a one-bedroom apartment in Winona County. In our 2019 Community Health Needs Assessment, and I've taken two pages of excerpts from that document for the second part of your handout, you can see at the chart that the percentage of responses talking about worry about not being able to pay rent, mortgage, and housing costs. The two percentage groups are, first of all, the overall data, and then we did we sent out surveys with 1,200 responses. That was about 31% return, and then we also followed up with listening sessions, including those needing translation services. So that's some of our special population. And their percent of worry about being not able to pay rent, mortgage, or housing costs was almost 50%. And you can see through the other areas, threat of services being shut off, problems with insect, problems with mold, water leaks, and in general, problems with housing. This is some of the cost burden data that I promised you from this, and this is not just seniors, this is across the board in Winona County. On the last page, you can look, and at the very bottom, it's talking about how the responses came through, how strong they came through for severe housing problems, homeownership, and severe housing cost burden. They appeared in almost all the categories there. And that is showing a severe housing problem with health needs across the board with Winona County. And the X's in the box indicate a problem area for Winona County. So that's some of our statistics in general and the start of some of our gaps. Excuse me. So this is clearly a group of citizens whose needs for secure and safe housing is not being met. Across the continuum, we also have gaps in our ability to supply housing for those leaving jail, on probation, or currently in our treatment and diversion courts. Safe housing is a critical part of rehabilitation and integration for these individuals. And we know that bringing families together reduces out-of-home placement costs, reduces the long-term effects of some of the trauma that was described by Dr. Ruth Charles, and also increases family stability. And so we do assist these individuals with job acquisition and reducing recidivism, and that's all part of their program. We have provided resources through a federal mental health grant for those who qualify in a program we call RAPS, Winona Rehabilitation Assistance Program, which provides housing assistance, and that has been the number one request for individuals in this program. And it's also seems to be the starting point for successful transition into becoming stable community members. But we lack comprehensive and consistent assistance for this area. I'm also a retired teacher for blind and visually impaired children and families. And in my last years of teaching, I had four families that had issues of homelessness. And if you realize the slim chances of that happening, a visually impaired child occurs one out of every 10,000 school children. So out of this small, small group of one out of every 10,000, I actually had four families dealing with homeless issues. Three families disappeared quite quickly. I never heard from them. We never had a request for records. These are students with complex medical and educational needs. And families were literally on the brink of disaster. And one family lost their home in the 2007 flood and was able to successfully rebuild with the assistance of the federal funding. So I appreciate that. In our community, I've been working with a citizen coalition addressing not only with the ACES Coalition and Mental Health Resources for Juveniles, but I have been working also with a citizen coalition addressing housing, homelessness, and poverty gaps. And they have identified connections in housing for these areas. We do operate a warming shelter during our winter months, and you know how cold it can be in Minnesota in the winter. And it operates between 9 p.m. and 7 a.m. So you can see by these hours that there are many gaps throughout an evening and a day for these individuals. And we hope to be working to close some of those gaps. I've sat in on sessions with our treatment court and with the Veterans Court, and I can state that stable housing is one of their first difficulties. I did not realize, I'm somewhat naive perhaps, that we actually had homeless veterans in our community with all the resources supposedly available for this group. And lastly, juvenile housing is a critical area. So you can see how all of this complicates our local efforts and strains resources in working now and in also planning on resources for our new jail. If some of these are challenges, so what would we say were some of the solutions? At a recent discussion with Association of Minnesota Counties, we brainstormed some options, and they are forming a statewide committee to identify further strategies, so there's more to come. In Winona County, we do rely on the Department of Administration data called Minnesota First. It provides us with data and an analysis of evidence-based programs. So we appreciate these resources, and we regularly apply them with all of our programs. An additional resource could be renovating existing housing to provide safe housing for current renters and homeowners. This would actually work to provide local jobs, partnering with the Minnesota State Southeast College programs and vocational programs. And we can use local volunteers, such as our Sentenced to Serve population, Habitat for Humanity, senior advocates, etc. The continuum needs and gaps needs further cross-program cooperation between community, regional, and state resources, and it needs to include eligibility and reimbursement issues. Winona County has ongoing coalitions that take this on, but we need the ability to act on these reforms and gaps in our system with additional housing options for those in severe need. So thank you, and I appreciate your time and attention in Winona County this week, and I look forward to continuing these discussions.
Well, thank you. And on the agenda, it appeared as Marcy, and you said it should be Marie?
Yes.
So we'll make sure that the minutes are corrected with your appropriate name.
And Kavesi is not here in case anybody's questioning. My son actually had Representative Pulaski as a teacher. He says he was one of his favorite teachers. So
very good. There's more than one former social studies teacher on the committee here, but probably at least in Winona, Pulaski is number one.
One more person.
We've got two more.
No, one more. The other one has been up. Lucy's been up already.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so we have Karen Soneman.
Soneman?
Karen. Okay.
Mr. Chair.
County Attorney.
Mr. Chair, Madam Speaker, members of the Ways and Means Committee,
Hello, good morning. I am Karen Sonneman, the Winona County Attorney, and I'm also the chair of the Winona County Criminal Justice Coordinating Council, or CJCC for short. It's been my great pleasure to meet many of you and talk with so many of you during this mini session, and I too thank Representative Pulaski for bringing it back to Winona. I've been county attorney for about 9 years now, having run for office in 2010 to bring criminal justice reform in the form of SMART and crime initiatives to Winona County. Prior to being the county attorney, I was a public defender for 20 years, and I served Houston County, Ms. Poppy's hometown, I guess, looked great. Fillmore County, Wabasha, where Representative Drazkowski is mostly from there, as well as Winona and some parts of Olmsted County. I was also in private practice during 15 of those years, and prior to becoming a lawyer, I was a telecommunications rate analyst for the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission in the 1980s, so that's a ways back, during the AT&T divestiture time, and helped the commission through state and federal policy changes. I have a law degree from William Mitchell, now Mitchell Hamlin, and I have a master's degree in agriculture economics from the University of Minnesota and an economics degree from University of Maryland. I also serve on the board of directors of the Minnesota County Attorneys Association, but my remarks are not meant to be representative of the County Attorneys Association. These remarks are strictly in my capacity as county attorney and CJCC chair. I've met with many of you at the Wednesday night reception. You heard from me there on what we have done in Winona County to reform criminal justice. Several of you on the Ways and Means Committee, I saw you yesterday at our session in the courthouse, and I really appreciate your presence there and learning about CJCC in more detail. Just a little review, CJCC is a body of elected and senior justice and community leaders, such as Superintendent Fryhart, City Councilman Michelle Alexander, who I think you heard a while back, Chief of Police Paul Bostrick, for Winona, Commissioner Cavassi, and many others. We meet once a month, and we coordinate systematic response to justice problems. We operate in a culture of collaboration with a common purpose and shared vision at the leadership and operational level of our members. Through that work, we've established early intervention, diversion, treatment court, and community reentry and stabilization programs for the benefit of the community at large. We foster an environment where we can have a better understanding of crime and criminal justice problems, greater cooperation among agencies and units of government, and more effective resource allocation. We believe we enhance the system and individual agency productivity and performance, provide better quality criminal justice programs and personnel, and increase public confidence in and support for criminal justice processes. We aid government leaders in evaluating and making decisions about the justice system and its cost and performance. Many local governments, and this is a quote about CJCs in general on the national level, are finding that comprehensive system-wide planning, interagency and cross-jurisdictional, helps to streamline the entire local system of justice, eliminating duplication, filling service gaps, and generally improving the quality of service while controlling costs. But while we have had success in establishing some programs, it has not been without difficulties, and sustaining these programs and having funds to continue our reform efforts is always a worry. That's why I have gray hair now. The work of criminal justice reform is challenging in a system of many working parts, many of which don't always work well together. While CJCC attempts to break down those barriers, many times we have been thwarted by old structural models of access to funding and service delivery. As Ruth Charles talked about this new, well, it's not new really, but the advanced childhood experiences, trauma-informed, the explosion of social media, everything has changed. And delivery of human services, including mental health and substance abuse treatment services, as well as the lack of simple services such as providing a bus pass, funds for getting a GED degree, just simple things that could make a difference between someone staying out of jail or finding themselves back in jail. So among many of these roadblocks we have encountered in establishing and sustaining the programs that we have started are access to existing funds and service delivery that seems to be, and this is my opinion, locked into programs that are so tightly bound by rules, particularly in human service programs. Sometimes I feel that we're putting together programs with duct tape, gum, and chicken wire. We make do with what we have, kind of like when we were kids. Remember the mousetrap game? We build the mousetrap and hope it works. You hope it doesn't fall apart, because then you'll have to start over. What I'm asking you to consider is that continued success in criminal justice reform requires shifting the paradigm. We need to focus on making smart investments where they matter most. And at the local level, criminal justice reform happens on the ground, in the trenches. We need your support to encourage and allow for the establishment and continued development and support of system-based, collaborative, multidisciplinary team design and run programs that are creative, efficiency, and effective solutions. These programs can reduce the number of mentally ill persons in jail. They can address adult and juvenile populations by reducing criminal and delinquent behavior by prevention, early intervention, to divert kids and adults from the criminal justice system, or help them avoid entering the system in the first place. Criminal justice is really a public health issue, it's a housing issue, it's an education issue, and it's an economic development issue. And looking at your budget report, 30.5% of the state's budget, or $14.7 billion, will go to human services in 2020-21, but only 5.1% goes to public safety and the judiciary. I'm asking you to take a critical look at the budget and the old models of health and human service delivery that could be radically organized. Shift the paradigm. Traditional prosecution will keep people who just are plain scary off the streets and who need to go to jail or prison. But most people's criminal problems are rooted in chronic poverty, lack of stable housing, untreated mental illness, and substance abuse. So shift the paradigm. Help us sustain and approve the programs that we have that work, to establish other programs that we need to continue our work in criminal justice reform. Thank you, and please contact me if you would like further and more detailed information about what I've only touched on the surface. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And that concludes the number of people that we had that were signed up in advance, but I do want to ask if there's anybody in the audience then that wasn't on our list that would like to comment before the committee, before we go to questions. Okay, it looks like everybody that wanted to participate from the audience has done so. We'll go to any questions that any of the committee members may have, and if you could maybe indicate who you would like to pose the question to. You all have a list of who testified. So any questions at this point? Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not a question so much as just a response to the overwhelming story that's been told. I confess that Linda Filesticker's led me to tears, which I haven't quite recovered from yet. But here's what I heard from the energy of Dr. Charles and Brian Vertig, and from the public school and the county commissioner. I heard the word collaboration over and over, which tells me you're all working together, and ultimately we sow on all of these challenges that you've outlined so well. We need one another. No one entity can do it. And so that was encouraging to me that I heard from each group, collaboration. You're all working with one another. And I wanted to particularly thank Marie Kubecki because the timeliness of this. The first two pages, that's what we hear from across the state. That's very similar. But the work you've done with the Winona County Community Health Needs Assessment, the detail of that third and fourth page, come at a good time as we're looking ahead to the next legislative session for are there other policy issues we need to be looking. So those two pages and the detail of that is not something I've seen in other parts of the state. So for me, that was helpful information. So mostly just thank you all for an amazing story you've told.
Well, thank you. And I just pulled some excerpts. That's a 50-page report. I did provide the full online, which unbelievably I think is four lines of things to type in, but that will get you to the 50-page report, which has other details and other information.
We are recording the meeting, so if in the future, if somebody is posed with a question or would like to comment, we'll need you come up to be picked up on the mic, but I think your voice carried perhaps well enough to be picked up. Any further questions or comments from committee members?
Yes.
Use the mic, please.
I was observing.
This is Representative Wagenius, by the way.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Your list of community health needs and your rankings of community health rankings below Minnesota average. And I must say I was surprised to see that air pollution and drinking water violations were checked. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. Our public health department has been working mostly in those areas. Some of it comes from housing issues with mold. Some of it is air inversion that seems to settle in our valleys, and it either aggravates or can have an onset with people who have asthma. So those are specifically conditions that people reported in the data. The water quality issue is a little more complicated even than that, because in the county we have the karst topography, as you know, which gives us caves and creeks and, you know, streams and sinkholes, but it also provides pretty steady and sometimes almost immediate access to our groundwater. So we're working carefully with different sources of pollution. We have had townships report as much as 30% of their private wells. These are wells that were voluntarily tested, so it's not a complete number of wells, but up to 30% of their wells were over the limits in terms of nitrates. So we're addressing a lot of those issues, and I think you maybe have seen some of that for those that heard from our Soil and Water Conservation District, and it's been coming through with a lot of the programs we're offering as resources to try to, you know, once there's nitrates in your water, there's no mitigation per se, and one solution is to dig deeper and to have, you know, maybe a different well structure, safer from intrusion, but we're working very hard to work with the geology that we have and protect. Water is a vital resource, as well as fresh air. So, yes, and the issues here, they're not like single issues. These occur in multiple capacities, so that makes it even more complicated. Thank you.
If I could follow up, Mr. Chair.
Representative Guinea.
I'm concerned about the nitrates in water, but more concerned because the Department of Agriculture's own data says that where there is nitrogen, there will be pesticides. And where there's a lot of nitrogen, and if you're over the limit, there will be a lot of pesticides. So for families, I worry about the children. And the fact that the state doesn't provide resources, since generally speaking, those families did not create the problem. It's something that we need to think about, and it would be helpful to have more input.
I agree, this is a very serious issue. And agriculture is about a third of our economic section of the county. So we have been working very carefully. There are programs with sponsoring regenerative agriculture. This is where you have cover crops on the ground all year, which reduces the amount of fertilizer that people have to use. And and also working with farmers to reduce tilling. These are strategies that not only improve water quality, but also improve soil health and reduce the farmers' costs. If they're not tilling, that saves some time. The cover crops can be interseeded right with the cash crops. And so, you know, we're really trying to work. And it's mostly farmer to farmer, but the support of our soil and water and conservation district cannot be underestimated. They're working very diligently. We're also watching things as storm sewer drainage from cities. We have another coalition working on healthy Lake Winona, which is in the city but is also fed by some of our creeks. So it's a very complex problem how water moves throughout our county and what sources approach it, both good and bad.
If I could follow up one more time.
Representative Guineas.
I totally appreciate the karst problem and the long-term solutions that you are looking at, because I think it will work. But in the short term, the kids are drinking that water. And that brings to me the question of what's our responsibility for filtering that drinking water in an individual house.
Well, we've been encouraging well testing, as I said, and once the residents are aware of the levels in their water, in their well, most of them don't drink the water. But that's, as you can see, that would be a great inconvenience. And when you can't access healthy water at your own kitchen tap, that's a problem. I have a well, and I live in the city, but our water has been tested to be, you know, safe to drink, obviously. And it's thousands of years old water. It's one of our natural resources that we really work hard to preserve and to protect in Winona County. Not without much controversy, I might add, but...
We have five people that are going to ask questions or comments, and we're not too pressed for time. We have a few minutes yet, but because of the schedule of the rest of the day, we'll need to adjourn by 5 minutes before the hour or on the hour, just as a reminder to members. Representative Dabney, you were next on the list.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the WAPS folks, I think is how I'm supposed to call you. You did an equally powerful presentation yesterday at the high school on the challenges students are facing with mental health. How do you understand the increase in the rates of depression and anxiety that we're seeing in students across the country, not just here in Winona? How do you understand prevention as a part of the response? And one of you is going to pull the short straw and have to come up and try to answer that question.
I was just going to say we'll need you to come up to the table, whichever. Or both.
Just a preference, Superintendent. I'm a strong supporter of school-linked mental health. We carried in the House this year funding for additional school support personnel. Unfortunately, the Senate would have none of that. So it's a both and. How do we respond to those children who are struggling? How do we better understand this epidemic?
Thank you, and I guess I drew the short straw.
Okay.
But I do have support.
Continue identifying yourself for the record in case someone would listen to the hearing so we know.
Dr. Annette Freiheit, Superintendent of Winona Area Public Schools. And I think a key to prevention of this is the collaboration you see among the county, the school district, and any other organizations within here to help support the families. So providing that support, and even starting at early as birth. And I know our early childhood programs, we start meeting with those families at birth and work with those families. And if we can provide services and help that, we can prevent some of those things from happening. But I think it's really a multi-pronged approach in order to help that. The affordable housing, good medical care, all those kinds of things help with the prevention of that. And then when they become students at the Winona Area Public Schools, they're in a better place to begin their schooling. So that's what I would say.
Thank you.
I'm Nancy Denzer, the chair of the school board. Having worked in that capacity for a number of years as a school counselor, and I'm kind of unique in that school counseling and principals don't usually Mary. I did. And it really makes a difference, I think, with all of our students that our teachers have enough training to be able to address it, because you can't see it. Mm-hmm. You have to get to know the students, and relationships with students is vital to making things happen. So we increase class size, which makes that more difficult. We create things that happen to our students where they're not safe, but we don't recognize it because we don't know all the information to ask. So for me, over the years, it's, you know, seeing more and more students come with one or more trauma, you know, qualifiers, and they're coming in very early on. We don't recognize it until we see multiple indicators, and then by some of the, then it's kind of too late to make a really big impact. But over the course of 34 years, I attended many funerals for students who were victims of suicide. And as each one of those happened, you learn that you really need to ask more questions of students, but you also have to get to know them, and relationships really is the most important thing we can do.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, next will be Representative Poppy.
The teacher also stepped forward.
Welcome back. I didn't see that you'd step forward, so
that's okay.
Feel free to comment. Linda and if you could identify yourself
yes,
again.
Yes, Linda Filesticker, social studies teacher. I think when we look at the complexity of this and the changing dynamics that we're seeing with mental health, because we get a lot of questions as to why do we see this increase in mental health needs and services. And I think also when we look at the perspectives of the opioid crisis, of meth in rural areas where we've seen that. Now we're seeing the children of those folks now coming in, and we're just starting to understand the effects of those two crises in our communities and the increased needs. So when you talk about trauma, that's one of the pieces that we're dealing with. And so then we're also at the high school level and the middle school level, and unfortunately even younger, really have to work continued again on drug prevention programs. How do we make sure that our kids do not self-medicate? Because in many cases, that's what they're doing, to try to maybe survive some of the, or deal with some of the trauma they've had, and then kind of perpetuate that cycle. So some of what we have to do is to break the cycle of what they've experienced at home. And so we bring in professionals when you talk about working with community members and other organizations to try to prevent some of those things from happening and break those cycles. It becomes really important.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Poppy. You pass.
No, I was pointing to...
Oh, I see. Okay, we had you on the list. Okay, so the list got a little shorter. Representative Scott.
Just a quick question for the county commissioner on the housing issue. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just wondering, on the data that you provided for us, you said 30% of your population are rent. And I'm just wondering if student housing is included in that number. Very simple question.
I would have to check on that. This is the Minnesota Housing Partnership data, so I was not involved with actually collecting that data. That would probably account for some of the renting in the county. I do have a comment on the previous question about preventing and working on mental illness. Specifically anxiety and depression. I think many of you heard from our community services director, Karen Sanis, and she was speaking about a program called Families First, which is a pilot program, and we're pleased to be rolling it out here in Winona County. This is, again, another example of an evidence-based program that we latched onto through the Minnesota Department of Administration data on the importance of family home visits. Okay, we know that if we can have an impact on families to keep them stable, to reduce those trauma issues with children, over 80% of our out-of-home placement families are related to substance abuse, so that's an issue we're addressing. We also have training with our sheriff's department, and a lot of it does come down to providing stable housing and stable services for those families.
Okay, well, thank you. We're at that point, though. Those were all that I had on the list, but I did indicate that I had a couple of more, and that would be the minority lead to make some conclusion or to make some comments, if you will. and then I'll recognize the majority leader to do the same. So Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks to everyone who's taken part in this event, including my colleagues and members of the community, and especially to the staff who worked so hard to organize the event. I know these things don't happen automatically. It takes a lot of time and planning and effort to make them happen. It's been obvious in our time here in Winona that you have a lot of resources in this community, a lot of people who care about your residents and your environment, and that is a tremendous asset. I'm sure it's been obvious to you that we have many demands put on the state budget, and in order to meet those demands to the best of our ability, we have to prioritize, we have to make choices, we have to make decisions. We also have to make sure that the state dollars are spent effectively. There's been some items in the news recently indicating that we're not doing the best job of that, and I would hope that as we approach the next session, we will carefully analyze how we spend tax dollars, because when we waste tax dollars, we're not meeting the real needs. We're pouring money down an empty hole, so to speak. I can't conclude my remarks without mentioning agriculture. As a farmer myself, agriculture right now is experiencing a very challenging time in many ways, and the weather is just one of them. These continued rains are making this harvest season a real challenge for many farmers all across the state, and I have to mention that and make sure that a community like this that is dependent on agriculture in many ways, as we learned as we visited the port and other aspects, it's very important. So thanks again to everyone who's taken part, and thanks especially to the community members that have stepped forward to educate us. It's been a great experience to be here in Winona. One more thing, Mr. Chair. There's been an effort to rename a few things across the state. I would hope you would resist the effort to rename the city Pulowskiville.
We've heard the name Pulowski quite a bit in the last few days, but he has had a long history of representing the community and has done a very good job in St. Paul. I think we all acknowledge that. For some concluding comments then from the Majority Leader, Ryan Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, all the members, particularly who took time to be here. This is not, just so everyone knows, this is not mandatory work on behalf of the members of the House of Representatives. This is a part-time job. And we concluded our official business when we passed the state budget in the end of May. And so the people who are here today and who've been here in this community in the last 3 days are taking time out of their lives, their professional responsibilities, their family obligations in order to be here. And as much as we need to thank the community of Winona for all of the work in welcoming us and putting the time into making this successful, I would like to acknowledge the high rate of participation from the members of the House of Representatives. And you might not always hear great stories about politics or about how we work at the state capitol, but regardless of our political views, we have a group of people who are overwhelmingly committed to the public good, care very much about the future of the state, the people of the state, and may have differences of opinion about the best way to meet and increase and improve the public welfare overall. Those differences of opinion are not indications that we don't believe in the same basic values. But what strikes me, the real value of the mini session, is that we at the state level deal in this pie chart of categories. And we have health and human services, we have higher education, we have property taxes, we have K-12 education, et cetera. And the kind of categories of funding, the state agencies, the counties that we administer health and human services through, all of those things are kind of abstractions. And what we have seen in Winona is the way that our work at the state level is translated into addressing community needs. And we're hearing a little bit of a tale of two cities, which is typical of our society in general. We have tremendous economic wealth being generated, beautiful community institutions, but simultaneously great social needs and cracks in the foundations of our society that we need to find ways to address. And I hope, for me, what I take away is a real need to understand that how we can change our budgeting our program design and the work that we do so that the communities in Minnesota that are actually trying to address adverse childhood experiences, addiction, mental health, suicide, socially dysfunctional behaviors of many kinds, economic stagnation and poverty, racial and social divides, environmental contamination, housing instability, healthcare inaccessibility, all of those things you're trying to address because it matters to the people in your community, and we need to do a better job of having the programs we create and fund actually allow you to do that work. And we can see that by being so in-depth for 3 days and by coming to a place and seeing it firsthand and seeing those experiences. And so I hope, Madam Speaker, that you have re-engaged the Minnesota House in a I think mini-session is kind of like a not a great name for what we do. We could work on that. But I think this is a good experience for us to understand where our high-level abstract and partisan decision-making is then affected in communities. And so I hope that we can continue to do that because we need to be better educated, not just about our own districts and our own politics, but about how different parts of the state need us to do a better job. And so that's, for me, it's a big takeaway, and I hope it's the start of a much longer process.
Well, thank you, Representative Winkler. We will need to adjourn, but I also want to thank the people here this morning that testified before the Ways and Means Committee. And in addition to committee members, I do want to acknowledge we had other members that are not on the committee sitting in, and including our leadership, the Speaker of the House, Majority Leader, and Representative Torkelson representing his caucus here this morning. And I want to thank everyone. You had a very bipartisan group sitting here, and we really appreciate all the members' involvement, but we do have to acknowledge the community. And I've been in the legislature beginning January, my 48th year, and I've participated in every single mini session, and they've all been very successful. But Winona has always been a very welcoming community, and I want to thank you for that. Some of us come down in addition to the mini sessions. I do want to point that out when we reference the 30 years. Capital Investment Committee has been here many times through the years. The LCCMR Committee, just to mention a couple that I've served on and been in Winona for countless times in the last 30 years. But there's something unique about the mini session, and maybe we'll have to think of a better name, but because that brings a good cross-section of the entire legislature together and a good cross-section of the community. And I should acknowledge the fact that this particular mini session also involved Rochester and some of the other communities here in southeastern Minnesota. And Austin, yes. So thank you very much. And we do have to board the buses by 11 o'clock, and that's about 2 or 3 minutes, I think. Well, 11:15. Okay, I was told we needed to adjourn by 11. Okay, so we have a few minutes for the bus, so maybe some members want to mingle a bit with people in the audience. And with that, meeting adjourned.